Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. This is our final case on for oral argument this morning. Consolidated cases A230867, A230871, and A231957 in the matter of the application by Minnesota Power for authority to increase rates for electric service in Minnesota. Council, you are familiar with our proceedings. We have granted an order for extended oral argument time. Oral arguments shall proceed as follows. Minnesota Power will have 15 minutes for principal arguments. Large power interveners will have 15 minutes for principal arguments. We will take a short break in between those arguments to allow council to reset at council table. The commission will have 15 minutes for a response, and then both of the relators will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. We'll take another break so that council can reset at council table. I'd ask that you introduce yourself and your client before you begin speaking because these matters are being recorded. I also ask that you let us know how we can reference you this morning. And with that, we're ready for you. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, David Moeller on behalf of appellant and respondent Minnesota Power. Minnesota Power's limited appeal is about a public utility obtaining certainty on recovery of its cost of capital for two separate assets that are used to serve Minnesota Power customers and meet federal and state policy requirements. I'm also available to answer questions regarding large power interveners' cross appeal on interim rates and rate design addressed in Minnesota Power's respondent brief. Turning first to the prepaid pension issue, before addressing the legal arguments, a concise example of how this works in practice is warranted. If, for example, the public utility here, Minnesota Power, invests or contributes $100 per year for 5 years to a pension trust, and in that trust, and then there's $90 of pension expense in each year, the result is that each year the increase in the trust is by $10. And after 5 years, the net contribution amount, or cumulative amount, is $50. This $50 is the prepaid pension asset for which investors are entitled to a return on the cost to finance these cumulative contributions, instead of just providing an interest-free loan without any return for their financing charges for debt and equity as required under the Constitution.
Can I just frame this? I have a question about this. It's my understanding that Minnesota Power, any return on investment from the shareholder contribution, that is excised from the request of Minnesota Power and in passing on the rate to the customer. Is that right?
So any return from the pension trust, market returns, as we call them, go back to customers through lower pension expense. And so those, by law, have to go back to, or can only be used for offsetting or lowering pension expense, Your Honor.
And they're not, it's not part of the rate request. Is that right? It's excised from that request?
But that's correct. Okay. What we're asking a rate request for, a return, is on the net cumulative contribution amount.
Just the contribution?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
The company makes these contributions in compliance with federal laws, with GAAP or general account or accounting practices.
Can I ask you a question about that too? So my understanding is that the Minnesota Power is required to make the investment by law. Is it required to make an investment in a particular type of account, an interest-bearing account?
There's not a specific type of account, but it's dedicated. It's a pension trust that can only be used for pension expenses to fund pension for retirees. It can't be used for other things.
And that's an interest-bearing account?
It is. Or it's
tied to market?
It's a market account with both stock and cash that's contributed by the company
and
to this account.
Does the company have an option to invest those funds in an account that's not tied to the market? I mean, I'm getting to the point of my questioning is this just a cost of doing business? Are you required to take all of these steps and the gains on the account are just part of the steps that the company is required to take?
We're required to put it into a dedicated account or a dedicated pension trust and then make sure that we're using that account for the benefit of retirees and to maximize those returns for retirees. But the account cannot be used for other non-pension expenses. And so we can't use it to just go invest in other parts. And so investors put amount into this account on a cumulative basis as required under federal law, under the Pension Protection Act of 2006, and there's been subsequent amendments as that, as well as ERISA tax laws. There's a plethora of laws that we have to abide by for contributing to this account. And then there's expense that comes out of that account as well that to offset to pay each year. So each year we have to pay out for retirees based on a number of factors, you know, how many retirees there are, what the value is of that retirement account or pension account for those retirees and other factors that just go into that play. And so that, and so we have a cumulative contribution that's required by law, and we have a cumulative expense, and it's the net amount that has to be pre-funded as a prepaid, and that we're asking for a return on that amount, because that capital, about $43 million of current, is our current cumulative contribution amount that we requested in this rate case, has not had a return. Investors are doing an interest-free loan for that to fund this cumulative account.
And has the commission ever, and I have read the 2013 NSP case, is the commission ever, the commission has previously approved this kind of asset as included in a rate base. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. In the 2013 NSP or XL case, there was an approval of a prepaid pension asset with a return on that prepaid pension asset. There's been other cases, including other Minnesota Power cases, where the commission has denied that request.
But the commission distinguished the 2013 XL case because it was uncontested. What's your response to that?
We think that's a standard that actually should not apply here. Whether something is contested or not, the commission still issued a written order, still looked at the analysis, had a record that made their decision on that. Whether the Department of Commerce contested it or other parties contested it doesn't matter. There's lots of issues in a rate case that are not contested. And just because something wasn't contested does not mean that there's a grounds for the commission changing its mind. Or if they do change their mind, they have to explain why they did. And our argument is they did not explain a justification for departing from that previous decision. And I would note, too, Minnesota Power, or I'm sorry, the state of Minnesota is an outlier as far as not allowing prepaid pension. You know, we cite in our brief a number of commissions, state courts, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, have all allowed prepaid pension assets and a recovery on prepaid pension assets.
So the commission's decision references that in a summary fashion that it has summarily denied the inclusion of this type of an asset in rates previously submitted by Minnesota Power, and for the same reasons it's doing so today. And can you help us understand why the quality of evidence that Minnesota Power submitted this time makes this a different situation? Or what did Minnesota Power produce in the record that addressed the concerns that had been previously identified by the commission for rejecting, as a justification for rejecting the inclusion of this asset?
I think we did a couple things, Your Honor. First, we demonstrated that all the dollars, all the stock and cash that go into this pension trust are from investors. They're not from ratepayers. And so we showed, you know, through the record, through answering discovery, through other means, in testimony and sworn testimony, that all the dollars are from the investors.
Is that disputed? Is that a disputed fact?
I think it is a disputed fact from the other parties as far as kind of what goes for pension expense, or at least the commission's decision or the commission's order said that that may be an issue or that we didn't meet our burden on that. We disagree with that. We think we met our burden, and we demonstrated in the record that this is correct, that there is no dispute on that from Minnesota Power's perspective, but it is a dispute in the record. I think the other thing we demonstrated was that any market returns from this go back to customers. And so if there's a market return off this pension trust, it goes back to lowering pension expense for the benefit of customers.
And is that disputed?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I think there's...
I'll ask.
Yeah. And then I think we also demonstrated that we're complying with GAAP. And so there's been disputes in prior cases about whether the utilities have complied with GAAP and other things. And in this case, we had both our internal expert, who is in charge of the pension trust, as well as an external expert who has worked on, Mr. Michael Farrell, whose testimony was not really discussed by the commission. But demonstrated that, you know, we have followed all the requirements as far as accounting, actuarial requirements, to demonstrate that this is a real asset. This is a real asset that you follow the dollars, you show the amounts, and that it's done in compliance with all the different requirements, and that our financial statements that we file with the SEC, subject to enforcement, are also in compliance with federal law. And that we showed, you know, in our financial statements that this is the prepaid pension asset, or the net cumulative contribution amount, is a number that is verifiable, is real, and is an asset that should be recovered.
Are there other verifiable, real, non-tangible assets that are included in the rate base? And can you talk about those?
There are, Your Honor. There's a number of them that the commission has recognized. You know, so it's not the same. One of the reasons the commission denied this was because it was a temporary asset. There's all types of assets that are temporary. I think everything but land that is in rate base would be considered temporary because the amounts go up and down based on depreciation reserves. But even more so as far as non-tangible assets, there are things like depreciation reserves, accumulated deferred income taxes. For example, in the 2017 Tax Reform Act that was passed, utilities, including Minnesota Power, not only lowered our tax rate that we applied for customers, but also changed how we did accumulated deferred taxes to the benefit of our customers by adjusting rate base. And so we have those type of things. There's also prepaid insurance amounts. There's other prepaid assets that are in rate base that have been recognized in rate base by Minnesota and other states.
So the fluctuating nature of the prepaid pension asset, from your perspective, shouldn't prevent it from being included in the rate base?
It should not, Your Honor. It's the cumulative amount that matters. It's that we have a net cumulative contribution amount here that matters, and that over time, and it's not one individual year, it's the net amount over time, especially since 2006 with the Pension Protection Act, where that amount has grown, but it's not that it fluctuates, it's that there's a cumulative amount there.
So if we were to agree with you that the prepaid or that the findings by the commission weren't based on substantial evidence or they were arbitrary and capricious or whatever under our standard of review, what then? Does the commission get to go back and reevaluate the evidence to determine and make more complete findings, or are you asking us to direct the commission to include the asset as part of the rate? And to that end, these three potential disputed issues of fact are concerning to me in that regard as to the second option.
I think, Your Honor, what we would ask is that the court reverse and remand back to the commission, but the amount itself, the $43 million, is not in dispute. That as far as what is in the net contribution amount or the net current contribution amount is not in dispute. The commission has said that it's just not be part of rate base. So if this court reverses the commission and says that you're exercising your will and not your judgment in making this decision, which is Minnesota Power's position, the court should reverse and remand back to the commission with a directive to include this amount in rate base and a return on this amount in rate base to adjust rates in the 2022 rate case.
I imagine the commission is going to argue that even if we agree to reverse, for example, they should on remand have an opportunity to provide additional findings on why they said that you failed to satisfy your burden to show the prepaid pension asset is entirely funded by shareholders and not partially by market returns. And so what's your response to that?
I think the commission relied upon testimony from the department and others to make that finding, but we think that finding was incorrect. And so it was arbitrary and capricious for the commission to make that finding that there was not, that there are, market returns do not go back to customers. We think that is incorrect. The commission had its opportunity when it reviewed the whole record. The record's not changing. It's the legal decision as far as whether the prepaid pension asset should be included in rate base is what we're asking the court to find here.
So from your perspective, there's essentially no evidence in the record to indicate that the prepaid pension asset is not entirely funded by shareholders.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So there's nothing to remand for them to make further findings on because there's nothing they could point to in the record that would support that conclusion.
That's correct.
What if they discredited your expert, though? I mean, don't they have the option to do that?
They could have. Parties have. The commission doesn't do cross-examination
right.
Under the contested case process, but parties had the opportunity to cross-examine Mr. Farrell, and they did not. They chose not to. Mm-hmm. And so there was no his testimony was not disputed. The commission also could have taken, during the oral argument and deliberations, the commission could have had the opportunity to hear from Mr. Farrell and from Mr. Cutchell and did not.
Mm-hmm.
And so the record was clear on that part as far as what this what the experts say, as well as the department witness during the evidentiary hearing said that we are complying with GAAP, too, which I think is a key component of this, which is different than what we had, what the department and others had argued in prior cases. Just turning briefly to the second issue on our limited appeal, Minnesota Power's, believes Taconite Harbor should be included in rate base and should was improperly excluded from rate base. I won't go through all the different changes.
Between 2005 and 2022, what happened at the Taconite Harbor plant?
So the commission idled, ordered us to idle the plant, and as in our integrated resource plan or IRP order, and we kept the plant available, offered it into the MISO market, which is the regional transmission market, and it was also the capacity for this plant was available for our customers, and so we could accredit that. We also put in safety, maintain safety, environmental compliance, other items for this plant, but it did not operate or did not generate electricity. But under the Senior Citizens Coalition case, our argument is that that's not the standard, or that's an inflexible standard for the commission to say you have to generate electricity, because it was available for customers, it was available if necessary, and it was not retired until January of 2023, with the IRP order. I see my time is up. I'll reserve 5 minutes for...
Anything else from the panel?
No.
All right.
Well, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. We'll take a moment to reset for the large power interveners.
Good morning, Your Honors. Andrew Muratska, Stoll Reeves Law Firm, on behalf of the large power interveners. LPI is here seeking reversal of two commission orders on appeal, grounded upon the application of existing law and precedent. The first order is the compliance filing order, which violates unambiguous interim rate statute language, which creates multiple unlawful comparisons for purposes of calculating an interim rate refund. The second order is the revenue allocation decision contained within the final rates order, which violates state law in undeniably failing to consider cost of service. In addressing the revenue allocation decision, LPI underscores that it is not seeking this court's determination that LPI's recommendation in the proceeding below be adopted. Instead, LPI is seeking reversal of the revenue allocation decision contained in the final rates order because the record evidence makes clear the cost of service was entirely ignored. Now, before turning to the arguments on those, I would like to address the waiver issue. Not only did LPI raise in its petition for reconsideration the interim rate refund issue, as the Public Utilities Commission concedes in its reply brief on page 17, LPI attached its detailed arguments filed at the beginning of this case as exhibits A and B. This is contained within index 382 and clearly outlines all of LPI's concerns with respect to the interim rate refund. There can be no claim. There is absolutely no evidence to support any waiver claim. Turning first to the compliance filing order, the standard of review is de novo because LPI raises a legal question. At issue is whether the interim rate refund approved in the compliance filing order was in excess of the commission's authority by violating unambiguous state law. This issue is important because the court needs to enforce its existing precedent on interim rate setting, and it is critical that the court again determine that the appropriate interim rate refund process is as written by the legislature. And the wrong that needs to be remedied is Minnesota Power's retention of roughly $7.7 million that should have been refunded to Minnesota Power's non-residential customers, including LPI members. The issue is reviewed de novo because it's a legal question involving the scope of the commission's authority and application of the plain meaning of the statute. For this proposition, we cite the Muellner's case and the Hubbard case. And as noted by Minnesota Power in its brief on page 30, no party asserts that the interim rate statute is ambiguous. LPI agrees, and when the statute's meaning is plain on its face, and as applied to the facts, judicial construction is neither necessary nor proper. So for purpose of calculating an interim rate refund, the interim rate statute sets up a simple comparison. State law directs and only allows the commission to compare rates, interim rates, with rates in the final determination and refund the difference with interest. The undisputed evidence in the proceeding is that the commission did not conduct this statutory comparison. Table 1 in LPI's briefing, which is contained in its principal brief on page 39, its reply brief on page 12, explains this commission's failure.
I have some reservations about the way that you're interpreting Subdivision 3. It seems as though you're saying that the subdivision creates this very rigid formula and without regard to the overall objective that's set forth in Subdivision 6 of the statute of the factors that the commission is to consider generally is the word that's used in the statute, to determine just and reasonable rates for public utilities. And the reason that I'm concerned about that is because it seems as though that you can choose a test year knowing that the test year may not be representative of the use of electricity or power on a going forward basis, because you've got these two large customers that everybody knows, including you and the commission, are going to start using significant amount of resources outside of the test year. But because of the way that you're constructing Subdivision 3 of the statute, the commission is somehow precluded from considering that use. And that doesn't seem right to me, and it doesn't seem to be consistent with Subdivision 6. What did I miss here?
Your Honor, with all due respect, you missed the difference between interim rates and final rates.
Okay.
Final rates, the commission does have to do everything you just said in considering what should be done to set just and reasonable rates on a forward-looking basis. The interim rate period, however, is not a substantive period for calculating rates. That's laid out in the Minnesota Power and Light case.
Okay.
Where the court specifically said, look, we understand that there's moving parts, but the interim, for purposes of calculating the interim rate refund, we look at two numbers, rates in the final determination and what were interim rates.
And there's no discretion, there's nothing that the commission can do
there's
in
no
that situation.
There's no discretion, Your Honor, under the statute, and there's no discretion under this court's interpretation of that statute from 1989 in the Minnesota Power and Light case. And there's clear direction from the state Supreme Court in the People's Natural Gas case that specifically explain the calculation is a simple comparison. Again, because there are so many moving parts. To say that there were sales that increased during the test year from two customers would ignore the fact that other sales may also have increased. Other costs may have increased. Other costs may have gone down. All of those moving parts are complicated, get litigated, and at the end of the case, we have rates in the final determination.
And the deference that's generally accorded to the commission in setting rates is absent in the interim rate context? That's your position?
Our position is that there is de novo review, and so deference isn't appropriate because this is a legal question. So it really boils down, Your Honor, to a simple question of subtraction. Right, the table one that we have in our briefing lays this out with the two variables being interim rates and rates in the final determination. Now, notably, no party disputes what those two variables are. What's at issue is whether the commission under state law can modify and create multiple rates in the final determination. The Minnesota Power and Light case says no, it cannot do that. Minnesota Power tried to do that in 1989. The commission rejected that proposal. Minnesota Power appealed, and this court affirmed the commission's decision, saying if the commission had specific, if A quote on page 557, if the legislature had intended that the commission make two separate final determinations, we believe the legislature would have included such language in the statute. That is what this court said in 1989. That is what we are saying this court should do again in 2024.
Why is this an issue of statutory interpretation subject to de novo review and not a substantial evidence review based on a quasi-judicial determination by the commission that the amounts weren't part of the excess amount collected for those two power, ST and Synovus to be included? Why isn't this more of a factual determination?
Because the question, Your Honor, is specifically what is the meaning of rates in the final determination? And we are saying there can only be one rates in the final determination. That is the rates that the commission sets on a going forward basis. The commission is suggesting that there can be multiple rates in the final determination for purposes of the interim rate refund. The statute does not allow that. And that is, again, precisely what was at issue in Minnesota Power and Light. That this court specifically said, the legislature did not allow for multiple rates in the final determination. It is a legal question. Furthermore, the People's case from 1986 specifically states that the refund process simply places each consumer class in the position it would have occupied had the interim rate been so calculated that it produced revenue equal to or less than those authorized by the final determination. That did not happen here because we aren't comparing only two variables. We're making multiple rates in the final determination, which then adjusts and changes what the difference is between the final rates and the interim rates that non-residential customers paid, including large power. The compliance filing order is therefore entirely inconsistent with the interim rate statute, and reversal and remand is appropriate. Turning next to the final rates order, the standard of review here can and should be de novo. Again, the final rates order's refusal to adopt LPI's recommendation on revenue allocation is not at issue. At issue is whether the commission exceeded its authority in entirely ignoring cost of service, which is a required part of every rate case filing. Now, we acknowledge that the St. Paul Chamber case establishes two potential standards of review, one in excess of statutory authority, or clear and convincing evidence. We believe, Your Honors, that under Mueller's and Hubbard again, and applying the law in this proceeding, that de novo review is appropriate. And the reason is that a core tenet of the regulatory compact is cost of service. This tenet is reflected in the commission promulgated regulations, specifically Minnesota Rule 7825, 0.4300 subpart C, which requires a class cost of service study to be included in every rate case filing. Minnesota Power, of course, complied with this rule in its initial filing of the matter, and as reflected in LPI's addendum, the final rates order devotes nearly 17 pages of analysis to Minnesota Power's class cost of service study. The results of this critique and the analysis demonstrate that the cost of service increase for the residential class needed to be roughly three times the system average, whereas cost of service for the large power class needed to be roughly one-third of the system average.
Could I back you up to the standard of review?
Sure.
And I'm sure the commissioner will address this, but urging us to adopt a de novo review, as you are, that to me seems a bit inconsistent with our case law. What is the most persuasive authority for that argument?
Well, Your Honor, the St. Paul Chamber case specifically says that even when acting in its legislative capacity, the decision will be upheld unless it exceeded its statutory authority or abuses discretion by clear and convincing evidence. So if it is ignoring the statutes that it promulgated in setting rates, then by definition, it is acting in excess of its statutory authority.
I mean, you're operating within that standard of review.
Correct, Your Honor.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
So, and I think, you know, to be clear, the other place you could look on that issue is Hibbing Taconite. You know, where isn't the rate making generally a legislative process? And Hibbing Taconite said, no, that's not quite right. Hibbing Taconite explained that the rate making can and should be broken out into both the revenue requirement piece and the revenue allocation piece. And so on the revenue requirement, you have the standard of review set forth under Northern States Power, where you have first the issue of did the utility establish a cost as a judicial fact, and then second, is it just and reasonable for consumers to bear that cost? And then even if we shift over into the revenue allocation, again, you look to the St. Paul Chamber case to decide, it, even applying its legislative authority, did it still act in excess of the statutory authority? So just to leave some final numbers, I see my time's wrapping up here. The finally approved system average increase was 9%. Under the cost of service that the commission approved, the analysis that the commission approved, that would mean that the residential class needed a 27% cost of service increase and the large power class needed a 3% increase. By applying an across-the-board increase, it entirely ignored that analysis and that huge discrepancy. I'll reserve my 5 minutes.
Yes. Any other questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much, Council. Council, we're going to take just a very short recess, 5 minutes, and then we'll return for the response.
All rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Frisch, Judge Eid, Judge Halberts, the Honorable Jennifer L. Frisch presiding.
Thank you. Please be seated, everyone. Thank you for your patience, everybody. And counsel for the commission, we will hear from you.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Susan Gretz, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. The commission respectfully requests that the court affirm the final rate case order in all respects and dismiss LPI's appeal of the refund order. I'll first address the two rate base items, Taconite Harbor and prepaid pension, and then turn to cost apportionment and waiver of the appeal.
When you talk about the, I'm sorry to just jump in, counsel, but Mr. Mueller identified three differences in the presentation of evidence that was presented to the commission this time on the prepaid pension asset, that all of the stock came from investors, not ratepayers, that market returns go back to the customers, and there was compliance with GAAP in the accounting procedures. Are those facts disputed? And if so, where is the evidence or testimony in the record that identifies that those are disputed issues of fact?
Two of the three are disputed, Your Honor.
Okay.
The GAAP, the commission's order did not turn on GAAP compliance or not compliance. It wasn't cited in the order.
Okay.
So we can set that one aside. With respect to the prepaid pension being 100% fully funded by shareholders, we absolutely disagree with that. The commission disagreed with that. And the evidence is, and everything the court really needs to see about prepaid pension claim in this case is in Cutshall's exhibit, or Schedule 9, that is reprinted on page 11 of our brief. And that exhibit illustrates that when pension expense, which is column W, is negative, the formula of contributions minus expense results in an increase to prepaid pension that happens without any contribution from shareholders. So Cutshall Exhibit 9 includes in the pension expense column, which is column X. So this is a complicated pension accounting exercise that goes on in that column X. And it can be negative and it can be positive, depending largely on market returns is when it goes negative. And when we all learned at some point in life that when you subtract a negative number, you actually increase the result.
And I appreciate that is the argument on appeal. And where is that in the commission's order, that explanation?
The explanation was the conclusion that the prepaid pension amount is not 100% fully funded by shareholders. That's what happens when that prepaid pension amount increases by virtue of a negative number in the pension expense column. There's no dispute about those numbers. There's no dispute about that the company makes contributions according to ERISA and the Pension Protection Act. That amount is undisputed. The amount in the expense column is undisputed. And the amount in column Z, which is the amount that customers pay, is also undisputed. And that's getting to the third point. Minnesota Power says that the returns on the pension expense go back to customers to lower pension expense. And our dispute is that that happens only indirectly, because it's only when the company comes in for a rate case and that column Z figure of what customers pay gets reset would customers ever see the benefit of market returns.
So my overarching concern about the argument that the commission is making on appeal is that our review is from the commission's order. And the commission's order, as I'm sure you will agree, is very conclusory, especially as compared to the very detailed factual findings that the ALJ made, which are actually contrary to the position that the commission is taking now on appeal and were not addressed by the commission in its order below. So why, how do we affirm this part, at least, of the commission's order when it's very difficult for us to tell that the commission made its decision based on what you're telling us now?
Well, I think, Your Honor, if you look at what the statute requires, the rate-based statute, it says what the commission, and gives direction to the commission about what needs to be considered. And I think that the fact that the nature of this so-called asset itself is quite different than what's listed in the rate-based statute also provides some support for what the commission did if it didn't state those fully. The commission stated in its order that this prepaid pension is unlike other rate-based items. The rate-based statute talks about items that are subject to depreciation. It talks about assets of a capital nature. Prepaid pension does not depreciate. Prepaid pension is not a capital asset.
But there's no explanation in the commission's order about why this asset is different in character than, for example, some of the examples that were cited by Minnesota Power, working capital, accumulated deferred income tax, construction work in process, intangible, prepayments. All of those things are also subject to fluctuation and are intangible in character. And there's no explanation as to why this asset is different in character such that it would be necessarily excluded from the rate. So again, how do we get past that on review?
I will note that with respect to those other types of assets, it's very easy to trace a shareholder or a company contribution toward those amounts. If they prepay insurance, we can see directly where that goes. But in this case, that convoluted pension expense figure is simply too complicated to directly suss out what amount might represent shareholder.
And again, you're saying that on appeal, but the commission didn't say that.
Your Honor, to the extent that a further explanation is warranted, we would advocate for a remand to allow the commission and, frankly, to allow the company an opportunity to further try to establish the extent to which that prepaid pension amount does represent shareholder funds. They haven't done that on this record, again, going back to Cutshall Schedule 9.
Would that involve reopening the record then?
It would, Your Honor. With respect to Taconite Harbor, the issue is whether the plant met the used and useful standard to be included in rate base. The law requires that it both be in service and reasonably necessary.
Sorry to stop you. I want to go back to the issue of the prepaid pension benefit. And this is sort of a general question with respect to the commission's order. When I was reading prior commission orders that are relevant to this case, in particular the 2013 NSP case, it seemed to me that the commission would specifically adopt findings of fact by the ALJ or redline findings of fact by the ALJ or reject them outright and explain why. And that, of course, did not happen in this case. And is there, I mean, would you agree that that is the best practice so that we would know upon which facts or which findings the commission is basing its decision?
That is an excellent practice, Your Honor, but I do feel the court has enough based on what the commission stated in this case and based on the evidence in the record that the fact that shareholders have not funded 100% of this is supported in the record and established as a reason why the commission did what it did, and that this is an asset unlike other rate-based assets that are right in our statute.
Can I ask you why, then, your answer to Judge Hallbrooks was that the record would need to be reopened if we disagreed that the commission adequately explained in the order and we remanded? Why would the record need to be reopened?
Well, on the record as it stands, the company has not established that the pension fund is 100% shareholder funded.
Right, but from your perspective, you have shown that, I mean, the commission has justified its decision based on what you're just pointing to, that it's not 100% shareholder funded, right?
So, correct. I mean, but if, right.
You aren't asking us simply to remand for further findings, or you're asking to reopen the record if we agree that it's not adequately explained?
I apologize if I misunderstood Judge Hallsberg's question, but I thought if there was a question about that issue of whether it was 100% shareholder funded, but if it is just for further explanation of how the commission arrived at the conclusion that it was not shareholder funded, that would absolutely be sufficient to simply remand.
I ask because
it
seems to me
findings.
That you do agree on one thing, and that the record supports your position,
yes,
your individual
position.
That's
correct.
Both of you agree that. It sounds like, okay, thank you.
Since 2015, the regional grid operator has never chosen Taconite Harbor to run or to provide service to Minnesota Power's customers. So the phrase in service and reasonably necessary to provide service must mean something. And in that case, in this case, while the commission excluded the facility from rate base, it allowed the company to collect its operation costs, insurance, depreciation, and property taxes for Taconite Harbor going forward. What that means is since 2015, customers have been fully served and paid for electric generation sources other than Taconite Harbor. Those customers are also paying for operation and maintenance, depreciation, and property taxes, even though they're not getting any energy from Taconite Harbor. To the extent that there's any doubt on this issue, that doubt must be resolved in favor of ratepayers, according to 216B.03, which means excluding Taconite Harbor from rate base. There is ample and substantial evidence in the record to support the Commission's conclusion that Taconite Harbor fails the used and useful standard.
Counsel, can you address the argument of the large power interveners that 216B16 sub 3 on the interim rates provides no discretion to the commission to consider factors that might be just and reasonable in determining rates for public utilities as set forth in subdivision 6 statute?
I disagree, Your Honor. That discretion is inherent in the charge for the commission to determine what amount is excess when we are determining what needs to be refunded based on the difference between final rates and interim rates. Somebody has to determine what amount is excess. And in this case, ST Paper and Synovus were going to be included in the sales revenue on a going forward basis because, and this is a key determination, because the commission determined that that was a known and measurable change to the test year. LPI cited the Minnesota Power and Light case, which is very different on its facts. There, the utility came in and wanted to have one cost of service study apply to interim rates and another cost of service apply during the final rates and to use two different numbers then for determination of the refund. That's very different than what is going on here, where the commission made a determination that in order to have the rates be reasonable, we had to include ST Paper and Synovus. But the company had not been receiving interim rate revenues from those two companies during that period of interim rates. They were totally not operational in 2022. They only started to come online in 2023. So that adjustment for the final rate determination and the sales forecast figure that was used in final rates had to be made in order to recognize that the company just didn't receive those revenues.
I agree that the commission adequately explained the basis of its decision. I think that the argument from the large power interveners is that that was an improper factor for the commission to even consider in setting the interim rate refund under Subdivision 3. And I'm sure the large power interveners will correct me if I'm incorrect, if I've mischaracterized their argument. But I do believe that the argument is that the commission acted outside of the scope of its statutory authority in that regard. Do you want to address that?
Yes, Your Honor, just simply going back, the statute requires a refund of excess amounts that are paid. And someone has to determine what is excess. And in a context where the final rate, order has found known and measurable changes to the test year, which overlaps with the period of interim rates, there's an adjustment that needs to be made there. And that's simply inherent in the statute that requires an excess determination be made.
And their argument is that the plain language of Subdivision 3 does not allow for that consideration. Is there some language in the statute that would allow for the consideration that you're referencing?
Your Honor, it's just simply inherent in the word excess. I mean, we have to determine what's excess.
That's what. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Judge.
Oh, I was just going to ask you. So, from your perspective, that's why it's a quasi-judicial determination, is a factual issue and not a statutory interpretation issue.
Correct, Your Honor. This is not subject to de novo review. Okay. This is within the commission's authority, and the intercity gas case noted that the commission gets a great deal of discretion with respect to determining the refund amount.
I just want to ask you quickly, with respect to preservation of this issue on appeal, could you address that?
Correct, Your Honor. The court does lack jurisdiction to consider LPI's appeal of the refund order. 216B.27 states very clearly that any party seeking judicial review of a commission decision has to file a petition for reconsideration and state with specificity the grounds on which the party asserted it's unlawful. Today, LPI said that they filed a petition for reconsideration, but they raised a concern, a different issue. They raised a concern about the differential treatment between residential ratepayers and non-residential in the interim rates. It wasn't about ST Paper and Synovus, which is what they're asking the court to address on its refund order here. There is no bar to a second. May I continue?
Of course.
There's no bar to considering a second petition for reconsideration if it was but had been made on different grounds, and ST Paper and Synovus would have been different grounds. They could have made that argument, and they didn't. If there are no further questions. The commission respectfully requests the court affirm the rate case orders and dismiss LPI's appeal.
Ms. Gritz. Judge Eden?
Just can I ask you,
absolutely.
Just if you could give a summary response to LPI's excess of statutory authority argument about the 9% across the board increase versus the energy policy goal of 216C.05 subdivision 2.4. That the retail electricity rates should be at least 5% below the national average. Why did the commission not act in excess of its statutory authority in going 9% across the board when it resulted in disparate rates for residential and non-residential customers?
Choosing to emphasize one policy, such as cost, cost of service, is not, we have a myriad of policies that the commission is to choose among. But choosing to emphasize one policy, such as ability to pay or avoiding rate shock over another, doesn't take the decision outside of the commission's authority. In fact, making choices among those many policy directives that the legislature gives us is exactly what the court in the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce case described as the commission's core legislative function. We have to make those choices. It wasn't the way LPI wanted, but we did consider cost of service, too. That's also perfectly clear from the order.
Anything else from the panel? Anything else, Judge E?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. We'll hear from Minnesota Power.
First, addressing the issue about the the commission's order versus the commission's briefing. I think the commission did change its position on briefing as far as what the ALJ said, because the ALJ looked at these issues in detail. The ALJ looked at the prepaid pension asset issue in detail, looked at the record, understood kind of what the testimony was, and made an evaluation. It's not binding on the commission, we recognize that, but it is subject to the commission explaining why the ALJ did not make the right determination, and the commission did not do that, did not do so in its order. Furthermore, the commission is not should not have deference as far as expertise. It does not have pension experts on its staff. It does not deal with these issues as far as federal compliance with pension laws, tax laws.
Do you agree the record doesn't need to be reopened? Sorry to interrupt.
No.
Do you agree? Since earlier in your first argument, you said the record supports your position. It sounds like your counterpart believes it supports hers. So,
I think the record is clear, and based on both our internal and external experts, as well as our auditors, PwC, other external auditors looked at this issue and said that the record is clear from their perspective. So we think what Minnesota Power requests is a legal determination that the commission, by denying prepaid pension assets in rate base, is a confiscatory taking, and so therefore a direction back to the commission to say that this should be included in rate base and then returns based on the numbers. I think the numbers themselves are not in dispute, the $43 million. It's just the sources, as we said, may be in dispute, but we think the record is clear that we've proven that it shows the sources. In those years that the commission cited with the negative pension expense, it's not the individual year, it's the cumulative amount that matters. It's the cumulative amount over time, as we've shown in our testimony and in our schedules, that the commission should have looked at and did not do so. On the issue of Taconite Harbor, as far as capacity, as far as whether it generate electricity, I think the Supreme Court and senior citizens said this should be a flexible decision as far as what it's not just generating electricity by the facility. Here, Taconite Harbor was available, was offered into the MISO market, was not taken up, but more importantly, the commission told us to do so. The commission told us to idle the plant and have it available for customers. Minnesota Power maintained that issue and maintained that plant until the commission made a determination in its integrated resource plan, which is binding on this commission, on this company, as far as how to operate plants. We've had other decisions where the commission has done that with IRPs, ordering us to retire plants. And the commission, because of the timing and delays, did not issue that IRP order until January 2023, after the test year. And so it was outside the test year. So during the test year, Taconite Harbor was available for customers, and Minnesota Power maintained it. On the issue of interim rates as addressed, I think we agree with the commission as far as this was a known and measurable change. Minnesota Power brought that known and measurable change to the commission for its approval, and the commission granted that. The two customers in dispute, SD Paper and Synovus, did not operate or did not have revenues during the test year, and so did not contribute to the interim rates that were collected. And the commission followed its precedent that it had done in the 2005 Excel docket or Excel rate case, where there was an adjustment where Flint Hills, the refinery, came back online at the end of the test year. And so, therefore, they adjusted interim rates and had two different calculations. We're not disputing the math, but we're disputing how the math is applied. And we don't think the additional refund is due or is warranted for the large power customers or any customers. We think the calculation was correct as the commission determined. Likewise, on the exigent circumstances issue that was not discussed earlier, but we think the commission had authority there to grant exigent circumstances to lower residential customer interim rates at the start of this rate case. And there was no harm to large power customers either from lowering that amount. And so we don't think there was an issue that should be, that we think the commission got it right there as well. I think, and then maybe just one other point as far as prepaid pension. I think Minnesota is the outlier here. There's a couple of commissions that have gone the other way, but the vast majority, if you look at the New Mexico Supreme Court case and New Mexico Attorney General, the courts and commissions have looked at this issue and found that this is a real tangible asset that commissions should grant rate-based treatment of and a return on rate-based treatment, and that's required under both Minnesota statutes as well as the U.S. Constitution, because this is confiscatory to not allow that and to have investors not have an interest-free loan. We request that the commission this court reverse and remand back to the commission for a direction based on these factual and legal determinations, or just legal determinations. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much, counsel. And we'll hear from the large power interveners.
Thank you, Your Honors. Briefly, I want to touch on the deference. The interim rate statute, again, provides two numbers and says that the commission shall refund the difference, right? Now, that's when interim rates exceed final rates. When interim rates are less than final rates, the utility is entitled to a surcharge. And in that scenario, there is the legislature has provided the commission with authority to, quote, prescribe a method, end quote, by which the utility will surcharge its customers. There is no way to prescribe a method for when interim rates are in excess of final rates. Looking at really simple numbers, if interim rates are 5 and final rates are 3, 5 minus 3 is 2. The commission is not allowed under the interim rate statute or any precedent that they have cited, they haven't cited any that would contradict LPI, that they get to say, no, even though we agree the numbers are 5 and 3, we're going to say 5 minus 4 and make it 1. That the commission cannot do. Second, Your Honors, even if you all disagree that the de novo standard of review doesn't apply to revenue allocation, there is clear and convincing evidence that the commission failed to consider cost of service. Again, it's undenied that the commission approved an across-the-board increase. As we noted in our reply brief, page 23, both Minnesota Power and the Department of Commerce testified during cross-examination that an across-the-board increase mathematically does not and cannot move rates closer to cost. So taking that at face value, which this court should, the enormous discrepancy provided by the commission's own approved cost of service study done by Minnesota Power, and the commission's acknowledgement in its order that it must pay, quote, particular attention to cost of service. By deciding to adopt a method that does not move rates closer to cost of service, the commission has in effect or ignored cost of service. And the troubling aspect of this is it's not just this case. It's decades. On page 55, LPI's principal brief, page 55, we provided, our witness provided analysis corroborating Minnesota Power's testimony that rates for industrial customers are well above average and residential customers are well below average. The table that's contained in our brief specifically shows that the largest increase to over the past 30 years in all of Minnesota Power's rate cases have gone to the large power class versus the other classes. That was undisputed. That was not addressed by the commission in its order. That was not rebutted by any party during the evidentiary hearings. Looking further on, and again, looking at page 55 of LPI's brief, LPI's witness provided testimony corroborating the low residential rates on Minnesota Power system. In addition to looking at national average, which Minnesota Power did, LPI's witness looked at neighboring utilities to show that the neighboring utilities of Minnesota Power are much higher than the rates on Minnesota Power System for residential customers. The commission's order does not address this fact in any meaningful way. Your Honors, again, the interim rate refund violated a simple mathematical calculation. The commission's revenue allocation decision entirely ignored cost of service. I have nothing further.
Anything else from the panel? Thank you very much, counsel. Thank you very much, counsel, for your submissions. They were very, and your arguments today are very helpful to the court. We will issue an opinion within the statutory time period. And that concludes our calendar, and we will adjourn to handle our non-oral cases today. Thank you very much. Thank you.